Welcome to iHeartGeek.
Hey everybody, it's iHeartGeek. Did you miss me? Because I'm obnoxious and I know I haven't been around for a while. But I've got Kevin and I've got Ryan with me, and we are going to crawl out of the fallout, baby. Hi, guys.
So hey, Courtney.
See, we're going to be talking about fallout. Are you guys ready for this?
I've been waiting to talk about this for 3 weeks
now. So we're going to be obviously talking about the Fallout TV show, first season of Fallout, over on Amazon Prime. I am your quasi-host, Miss Geeky Page. With me is Kevin and Ryan. Okay, guys, let's talk about Fallout. And first off, let's talk about the games. I've never played the games, so I went into this blind. So tell me about the games, you guys.
Well, okay, so Fallout is a first-person shooter RPG set in an alternate futuristic universe. It's a split timeline from where we're at, and it's split about 1955. And nobody really knows when it's split, but around the 1950s. And where we pick up in the show is actually 2077. That's when the big Great War happens. That was the first big bomb. So we're even more future than we are now, even though it looks like it's in the 50s. Mass wars happen. Atomic bombs were dropped, destroyed the world. And then 218 years later, you have an absolute wasteland that you're surviving in. And the show did a really good job. I know Ryan and I have talked about it, done a really good job of how the games opened. All of them kind of open when you're in the vault, except for New Vegas, where it's just you have no idea what's going on. And the show did a really good job about that.
There's four games, right? So there's Fallout 1, 2, 3, and then New Vegas, or are there five?
There's five games. So you have Fallout 1 and 2, which mm-hmm. are original Obsidian games. A lot of those guys who left that studio got the opportunity to rework on Fallout New Vegas. And that one, Fallout New Vegas, very different from Fallout 3, 4, and 76. Now, 76 and 4 are the ones that everybody's gravitating to right now. Because the show's catapulted this thing back into attention. Fallout 3 is, I'll lead right into it. Fallout 3 is what episode 1 and 2 were. You mm-hmm. basically have a tutorial hour in the first part of Fallout 3, and they hit everything in the first episode of the show. The birthday scene, we see a glimpse of the classroom. The camaraderie of being in the vault and you know, the vault tech, everything. They just, what they needed to do in episode one for Kevin and I, they did. And they did it really well.
Well, in episode one was the absolute perfect amount of both fan service and world building to me. Because like, and I want to, Courtney, I want to hear your reaction to it. Because like, with me, I mean, everything about episode one, even so far as at the end of the episode when they were shooting and everything, and you have the heads exploding almost from like the guns and stuff. That's a really Fallout. It's mm-hmm. comically gory, but like in an okay way. And I would, as soon as that started happening, I'm like, oh my God, this show, they did it perfectly. Courtney, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, for me, as I said, I've never played the games. I am familiar to a certain extent with Fallout. Like I kind of had a sort of an idea of what it was, never playing the games. But as the guys know, that whole era is one of my favorite kind of eras. And I really love Atom Punk and Diesel Punk, which is what this kind of stuff is. So like we've all heard about steampunk, which is kind of like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. But there are other variants of that kind of world, and that is Atom Punk and Diesel Punk, and that's what this is. And it's that like atomic, but futuristic atomic kind of age. And also, I listen to a lot of the music that they used in the show and they use in the game. I listen to that on the daily basis. Anyways, so I got like a massive kick out of, as Kevin was saying, here's this scene where everybody's heads are exploding and there's the gulper and there's all these gory, nasty things happening, and you're hearing bongo, 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 I don't want to leave the Congo by Danny Kaye and the Andrews sisters. And I mean, it was just, it's that tongue in cheek that really just made me giggle a lot. And it's like somebody's getting their head blown off and I'm laughing like an idiot. I mean, it was just, that was a lot of fun. I know there's lots of Easter eggs involved in kind of this stuff. So I know that a lot of the music that they use comes straight from the game. On YouTube, there is a best of Fallout Radio playlist that I listened to at work. So I was familiar with all of the songs that they were going to use, not how they were used, but that they were going to use. But I know that there's like all sorts of other Easter eggy stuff that I missed because I don't play the game. I think maybe the only Easter eggy thing that I sort of kind of got is at the final episode when McLean walks into the desert and we see a bighorn sheep, sort of.
Deathclaw.
Like a mutated. Mutated.
Deathclaw. Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Okay, yeah. So the Deathclaw Club, which is literally just, it looks to me as a Nevadan, it looks like a mutated bighorn sheep, which are indigenous to Nevada. So I pretty much knew that that was going to be New Vegas. And then, of course, they turned around and I was like, oh, okay, there we go. Well, guys, what were some of the other really cool Easter eggy things that you guys caught that I missed as a non-game player?
There's a lot. So as far as like story-wise, the water
chip. We only got an hour. Keep them little.
Yep, the water chip scenario where they where the water chip is broken, that's from Fallout 2.
Mm-hmm.
The dog meat, that he's a big character for dog sidekick. Meat. I mean, he's a sidekick
I
to
love
you
the
in
dog.
Fallout 4.
I was extremely girly when I thought the ghoul was going to kill the dog. I'm like, no, not the dog!
Dog meat is okay. As soon as dog meat came, I got all excited, and then they killed him. And I was like, what? No, that's like an important part. And then all of a sudden, they raised him back, and I was always happy. I'm sorry, Ryan, I interrupted you. But
you've got Lucy walking into the desert with him. That shot from the back, that is straight them trying to replicate what you get in Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. You got the bobbleheads. My understanding is, a little bit of my research outside of it, is I saw that Todd Howard, who is like the director for Bethesda, said that this studio who made Fallout was so dedicated to putting Fallout in like physically that they were asking for 3D files of things and just 3D printing things and putting it into the show.
Another thing, let me just piggyback that. I was talking to a friend at work who is a huge Fallout fan and knew about this stuff. He was telling me that a lot of the extras that we see are, in fact, Fallout cosplayers. And they actually were asked to contribute to some of the costuming and some of the set building. Because a lot of the show, yes, it is CGI. But a good portion of it is practical effects. Like they built the set for Philly. They built the vault. These aren't
Rocket gas station
screen.
Was a full.
It's an actual gas station. Yeah, I mean, it's these things were, and like when he steps out into New Vegas and you see the desert, that's my backyard. So I mean, I thought that was a really fascinating thing too. Is like there's so many practical. They could have CGI'd the entire thing, but they didn't.
Aren't we all clamoring for practical effects at this point?
Yeah.
I think they delivered on it. Yeah, they absolutely delivered it.
When you use practical effects and it's done right, it brings a certain magic to movie making that you just don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that were so great about the original Star Wars was the sets. You know, mm-hmm. The sets, nobody had ever seen these sets before, and I don't want to compare this Fallout to Star Wars, but in a sense, the way they built these sets and the way it felt like you were in a game. That was the mm-hmm. coolest thing. It felt like I was in the game, just with the music and everything. Even them doing the special, the SPECIAL in the beginning. That's how you upgrade your character mm-hmm. in the game. Is your strength, perception.
There you go. More
kind of stuff.
Yeah. More Easter egg stuff.
And then like, and you see her, she's like, you're special. And then she's shooting it and hitting right in the bullseye. Like that's like straight out of, which was awesome, you know? And it's fun to see video game shows that they're not just frowned upon. Like your biggest concern is whenever you, a movie or a show, my biggest concern was, oh wow, I hope they don't screw this up. Mm-hmm. You know? And they knocked it out of the park, so much so that it's becoming a resurgence now, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, Courtney, we've gone over the beauty of the games, the beauty of what they brought from those games to live screen. We've gone over the practical effects. How about we ask our semi-finalist screenwriter about the writing?
Congratulations, Courtney.
Congratulations on that one.
Sorry, listeners. As you know that I am a writer in my alternate life, and one of my sci-fi scripts has semi-finaled in a contest. So the guys are showing me so love. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed the writing because it was a great juxtaposition of that 1950s vernacular that we saw with like the okie dokie. And what was really fun how they used some of those lines, like the okie dokies happened for Lucy whenever, you know, stuff was going to hit the fan.
He's about ready to cut the dude's head off. She goes, okie dokie.
Okie dokie. I mean, it's just, it was a brilliant way of using that kind of vernacular. And, but, I mean, Ryan and I talked a little bit about it, and Kev, we'll pull you in, is we talked a little bit about some of the really impactful lines that we enjoyed. There was a lot of lighthearted ones that were funny, but then there were a lot of deep ones. I know, Ryan, you had a couple that you really liked. Why don't you... share those with the class.
So we talk about like there being a divergent point where this is not our reality. And there was a line between McLean and his buddy there. And he goes, "You might as well be asking why everyone prefers Jell-O cake to apple pie. I don't know why." And it's like, well, you know, it's as American as apple pie. Well, now this world's as American as Jell-O cake. And it's like, it was the signifying point that this is not your reality. Mm-hmm. This isn't where you're from. Mm-hmm. This is not where you're going, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when you talk about this show, they paced it so well. The comic relief of characters like Thaddeus. Mm-hmm. You know, Walter Goggins, you know, as the ghoul is unbelievable. But Thaddeus,
he's a beast of acting.
Thaddeus and Lucy are like some kind of comic relief that you just needed in this show. It was gonna struggle without that. So they have mm-hmm. these lines where you know, deciding, you know, if that's the head, and Thaddeus even at the end of the show. No, I'm so much better with a scope. And like that, to me, Kevin, you can elaborate if you think I'm right.
Why am I not dead?
Yeah, it's kind of like a callback to the VAT system in the game. Is mm-hmm. like you need the targeting system in that game.
Yeah.
Or shooting stuff doesn't
the
work.
The most annoying video game system mechanic of all time.
Nice. You can fight me on that. It is the epitome of remove your, like, it takes me out of the game so badly every time.
So what we're talking about, Courtney, is so the VAT system in the video game of Fallout. What it is, you're going around, so it's supposed to be a first-person shooter. You're supposed to be shooting. The only game out of the entire series that got shooting right was Fallout 4. And it's not perfect, but it's manageable. All the other games, you're using this system where you're vast. You have all these creatures, and all of a sudden, you got to like zoom in and go, shoot, and then you pick out which body part you want to shoot. But what winds up happening is you only have so much to do that with, and then you run out of like points. Well, then you can't do it anymore. So now all of a sudden, because you can't shoot at all, everybody's just shooting at you, and it's the most frustrating thing about the game.
You're constantly spamming to get back into the system.
Yeah.
And then that scene makes a whole lot of sense where he's just shooting, like raining down fire on Lucy and Max and not hitting anybody.
Right.
So, I mean, that was funny for me that he wasn't hitting anybody. But for the game players, it would be even funnier because you understand why he's not hitting anybody. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to another really interesting thing about this show that I really loved, and that scene. So the cameos in this are insane. You've got Michael Rapaport as Titus. yeah. which is also the name of his show. You've got Fred Armisen as the DJ. You had Eric Estrada.
Eric Estrada, yeah.
As the lead farmer that Goggins shoots his kid. I mean, you just, these random people are just popping up all over this universe. And it, like, Estrada took the thing off, and I'm like, wait a minute. Is that? No, I had to look that up. So, I mean, that's the other thing is clearly the creative team behind this show is just calling in people everywhere. And I mean, I would not be surprised if season two, we see Linda Carter showing up because her son is one of the producers, one of the executive producers. So that makes it really fun because you've got something happening. You're like, oh, wait a minute. That's no.
So for me, one of the things I would like to see, like if we're looking ahead to season two and like some of those people to show up, like how great would it be to see like Ron Howard, like, you know, an Andy Griffith character, like bring somebody back from like the TV land stuff mm-hmm. and put him on the screen or even one of the Brady Bunch, like, mm-hmm. like something like that. Like that's what I want to see going forward. The outlook on this show is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Courtney, the life this game, this show gave the games. I was looking, you know, sales charts in the UK, mm-hmm. and three or four of the games were in the top 10 of sales. Like the newest one's 8 years old. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
What was really cool about this? We started to watch this. We chat with each other and we said, "Hey guys, Fallout's out." And we all, I think, sat down to watch it in our respective homes. And we said, "Wait a minute, did they release all the episodes at once?" Basically, Amazon Prime just said, "Here, take it. Just take the whole thing." And, you know, they could have parsed it out. But I think part of the success of it, too, was that they dropped it all at once. And then everybody could either binge it all at once or they could watch it over a period of whatever they wanted. Like the guys, you guys watched it pretty close to binging
about
it.
A week. Yeah.
Yeah. I just finished the last episode this morning before we did the show. And I mean, another thing that I thought was interesting, I don't know if you guys picked up on this. So episode one and two seemed very heavy and very slow, not in a bad way, but very heavy and very slow. But when I was sitting down to watch episode two and three, three, four, and five kind of roll. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like the credits roll and you're like, wait a minute, I just started this episode. So they started to pick up steam as they got closer to the eighth episode, to the finale. The finale slowed down a little bit more because there was more exposition that they had to provide to us, but it didn't stop the flow, in my opinion.
Well, it's really interesting how they built this show, because it's the first. First of all, you do have your side quest show, which Goggins' character says one of the rules of the Wasteland is you got to constantly be
trying to survive.
He says you got to be constantly distracted by all kinds of BS.
Right.
That's the game. You're constantly going on side quest. I'm going on this main quest, and all of a sudden, 3 hours later, you haven't even touched the main quest. But mm-hmm. the first seven episodes was world building. So mm-hmm. it was who's this character? Who's that character? Who's this world? Here's this land. This happened at this date. This happened in this area. Here's this creature. But because there was so much world building and it was so good that in episode eight, they just answered everything. And it mm-hmm. was actually really, it was like mm-hmm. the dominoes were hit and they all started falling mm-hmm. down right in place as everybody converged on the one area.
Mm-hmm. And there's still enough in the air that you want to watch season two. Sometimes with these shows, I think it's like what happened with Game of Thrones. I think too much stuff was held back. And then sometimes they either give you too much and you just don't care what's coming out, or they don't give you enough. I think this gave you just enough of what we needed to tie things together to carry us on to season two, which we now know is going to take place in New Vegas. I'm excited as a Vegas girl, but I don't know what's going to happen because I've never played the game.
The story there for like New Vegas and that scenario that they can present there, especially with the way they did season one, is wildly intriguing. But I'm curious how you guys liked them just dropping all the episodes. I'm a father of three kids. I don't have the time. I didn't like it.
No, I don't like it.
I want the week. I love the week by week suspense. I like that. You know, when we do shows like this, we can all pace each other. We're all going to wrap it up at the same time. I think it was great the way they kind of like out of left fielded everything. They like moved their release date up. They didn't tell anybody they were going to drop all the episodes. I thought that was great. But I think as far as the pacing and what I need that show to be every week. I need an every week show because I can't keep up with everybody else with everything going on.
Well, it ruins the conversation in part because if you're having a show once a week, okay, I know you guys are going to watch this episode within these 4 days. So I'm not going to talk to you, but within the 4 days, I'm going to talk to you. With this right here, you're constantly saying, okay, well, what episode do you want? What episode do you want? Oh, wait a second. Did that episode in episode 3 or 4? I don't want to talk to you about it. It ruins the conversation, which I think is really special about shows like this.
Right. And we were kind of put behind the eight ball in terms of like doing this show. Like,
yeah,
we almost, not going to say we missed the opportunity, but, you know, with how quickly it comes out and how quickly everybody wants to talk about it.
So
they tighten the window there versus like an 8 week release.
That kind of leads into my next question for you guys. What do we want to see in season two? Obviously you guys would like to see that it be a weekly show as opposed to dropped all at once. But what are some of the other things? Because we know we're gonna get a season two because they announced it, that it's already been renewed. In fact, I think it hadn't even come out. First season hadn't even come out yet. It was like on the verge of being released, and they said yes, it's coming back for season two. Which is good since they left us with the cliffhanger-ish that it's New Vegas. And then they've also, what I've read is that a character of Mr. House, maybe you guys can talk on that. What do we hope to see in season two? I just want to see more 1950s Adam Punk, Diesel Punk fun. What do you guys want to see?
I want to see a Deathclaw. We were Deathclaws.
And that's the bighorn sheepy thing, right?
Bighorn sheepy thing. Those things
okay.
are
that's the technical term.
Atrocious and fall. They're so difficult to kill. And they're definitely late game creatures. But the fact that we got the skull, meaning it's going to be coming. And so I really want to see a death.
There were a couple of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. As far as the skulls, yeah.
Yeah.
As far as the game, I with season two, I'm interested in what are we going to resolve storyline wise? The game presents four choices as to how the game ends. And season two is going to make one of those endings canon. And three of those endings are not going to be canon. So what becomes canonical in the Fallout universe? That's going to be an interesting point for myself. I know what I think should happen. And I think you're going to love the Mr. House character. He's this looming figure in New Vegas, and he's almost like he's almost like Oz and like the Wizard of Oz. He's like this.
And I do want to see Wayne Newton come back as the radio announcer for New Vegas because it's just me and my Vegasy thing. Kevin, do you have anything else that you're kind of looking forward to in season two?
Yeah, so I want to get more backstory on the Enclave. You know, we're gonna see, and I want to have our favorite characters too, but we're gonna wind up seeing Maximus go into knighthood, right? Like, so he was Moldinger. They think that he killed Moldinger. And so, Moldiver. And so now he's going to be knighthood. And we're going to be able to see, one, the inner workings of the Brotherhood of Steel. The actual inner workings, we're going to be able to be point blank with it. I want to see more of the Enclave. I want to see what's going on behind the scenes. Who are they? Why were they associated with those three vaults? Because usually the vaults are just singular vaults and they have experiments in singular vaults. These three vaults were interconnected and they didn't have the big bosses, but they definitely had bosses there. So is there another vault that's even better than there? And is that where the ghouls, wife, and kids are? You know? And are we going to, we're probably going to see his wife and kid in the future somewhere. And his that reunion, I don't think is going to be as bows and whistles, you know?
Oh, yeah, most likely not. Yeah, yeah, my friend I was talking to, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, did tell me that 31, 32, and 33 are configured differently than any other vaults.
Yep.
And they're connected yep. as no other vaults are. And that's like a big, which is interesting because if you think about it, so there's those three vaults, but in the grand scheme of the show, and I'm sure it's the same thing in the game, is there are three large-ish factions. There's the Brotherhood of Steel, there's the Vault Dwellers, and then you could say the Ghoul is a factor, but not really. It's more Muldiver's New California Republic kind of thing. So there's technically three factions, but there's the three interconnected. So that number three maybe that's something to that.
There's a lot more factions than that. You have the New California Republic.
Yeah, which will probably Enclave, open up farther when we see it. Yeah.
You have, in terms of New Vegas, you have everything going on with Mr. House. He has mm-hmm. a whole group of people. And then there's another faction that are like worshipers of like ancient Rome. I forgot what the name of them are. But you have them as well to deal with. And that's what I'm saying is like, what's going to be interesting is how they present the New California Republic and the downfall of it. What leads to the Sandy Shores situation. It's going to be really interesting because they're going to have to delve into that. They're going to have to answer something as to what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. What was your guys' favorite character and least favorite character? Ryan?
My favorite character is certainly Thaddeus. My least favorite. I don't think I have a least favorite in this show. Lucy grew on me. I'm not a big Walter Goggins fan, but he was great in this. He was unbelievable in this. My opinion is null and void prior to this show now. So I'm gonna say I don't really have a character I didn't like. Some of this stuff with the Brotherhood of Steel, I wasn't like a massive fan of, but I thought Maximus grew on me. Thaddeus, hilarious, beautiful comic relief. It's well written.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Thaddeus, and he's like, why aren't I dying?
Oh, that's good. So Kevin, I'm 100% that ghoul girl. The thing is Walton Goggins is a beast of a character actor. So, you know, to go from like the character Venus that he played in Sense of Anarchy, and then to Uncle Baby Billy and the Righteous Gemstones, and then to the ghoul in Fallout. I mean, it's a lot. He's just, the acting, he kills me with that. It's so much. I just feeling that Ryan did is like, I think Maximus, I didn't particularly care for him at first, but he did grow on me. If I had to pick a least favorite character, it would probably be Steph, but that's only because I don't know what her agenda is. And I know we're gonna find out more about her because she's the new interim overseer of 32. So mm-hmm. I mean, it's just that's probably my only issue is I don't know what's lurking, and there has to be something lurking, but I have a feeling that we're going to find out more about her in season two, and I don't know if she's my least favorite character or just the one that I'm not as invested in as everybody else.
That's actually my favorite character is Goggins the ghoul. By far, what a nuanced character. That character shows you what a good man becomes in the wasteland. You know, he's been in the wasteland for 200 and something years, 218 years, and he's lost his note. He's turned into a ghoul. He's taking mass amounts of drugs all the time, and he's killing people left and right. And this was a good man, good fatherly, you know, role model before. That's the wasteland, and just the nuance of that character to where you start this character off going, hey, this guy's evil. And then the more you learn him, it's like, oh, well, I think I might be doing the exact same thing in his situation, which I think is really cool because he's a murderer. But yeah,
very much relates, very much an anti-hero. Yeah, very much an anti-hero. He's not a hero. He's not a villain. He is that morally gray character because he's just looking for his family, but he's also a murdering ghoul. I mean, he's
chaotic good. Yeah.
I mean, like when he killed the one ghoul, and that's another one of those lines, Ryan. I can't say it on the podcast because it has a dirty word in it, but he said, jerky doesn't make itself. I'm like, that's so gross.
He's eating the guy.
So gross, but it is what he is. So
he is what the wasteland is.
Yeah,
the wasteland is.
Yeah,
also, my favorite character is
didn't talk about Headsworth, the floating robot in Super Duper Mart.
Oh,
that was so snip, good. That was so
snip,
good.
Snip,
yeah, snip. He's
so
that robot.
That was so well done.
Robco.
Well,
Robco.
The head on the brain on the Roomba.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, it was pretty funny.
So Robco, they mentioned, and remember that the room in the very last episode where they're all there and you have all the big wigs on top of the balls? Those signs were all important, but Robco is very, very important in the games. And that's the one that creates all the robots and androids and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw him, I'm like, oh my God, look at that. And it's just like what they would do.
And it's, again, the cameos again, because it's Matt Berry from What We Do in the Shadows. It's like I heard the voice and I'm like, wait a minute, is that? So, yeah.
This show gives me so much hope for Borderlands. Hopefully. I know this isn't about Borderlands. But
I know it's a different studio, so...
I know. We're hoping. The show was done the way it should have been.
We've done the Vault Dwellers. Now it's time to do the Vault Hunters.
Well, and I will say, what for a grand scheme of television, the fact that this is so successful and it's caused a resurgence in the video games and so forth is a really good thing, because a lot of the talk out of Hollywood in the studios with it, they were only going to make shows that were two seasons long, but also they weren't going to do any heavy effects laden shows because of the cost. But the fact that this one is like the number one show in the country right now, it bodes well that we might get more things like this, which, you know, we had the video game shows like The Last of Us, which was pretty dark and pretty grim. While this has the darkness and the grim, it's still lighthearted, colorful, and fun. So it walks that really cool line of being a drama adventure show, but also it's funny and it's candy colored and it's full of spam.
A perfect example of what you're talking about there is what was the girl with the blonde hair that got her eye poked out in the beginning?
Steph. She's the one that makes up to no good.
So Steph's there. She gets a freaking arrow in her eye. She goes, the arrow's sticking out of her eye, and she just you know, but it's the most outrageous thing ever. Like, it doesn't even affect her. And that's perfect.
And I feel like that's true to what happens in the game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, thing.
Yeah. Or like the other thing is the guns, the shooting and the violence is so over the top. Like, that's what I noticed in the fight scene in Philly when the ghoul is just, you know, laying waste to everybody. It's like, it is that exaggerated video game kind of shooting and gunshot wounds and things of that nature. And it was almost comical as it was happening, and I kind of dug that.
Well, there's a handful that they certainly can pull from. You know, Kevin mentioned Borderlands, that'd be great. Horizon, those two games are unbelievable. You know,
Borderlands is getting a TV show.
It is.
I don't know if it's a TV show or a movie. I think it's a movie, actually.
Well, is it going to be a good movie? So
I don't know. It's got Kate Blanchett in it.
That's the question. So I'm just pointing out that, you know, there's properties within video games. One of the things they seem to struggle with now is unique stories. There's a ton of them to pull from. Nier Automata being one, Ghost of Tsushima, Horizon. They could do a Dark Souls show, Skyrim. I mean, Red Dead Redemption. I mean, there's a million stories they could quickly translate.
They could just give me an LA Noir. TV
an
show.
LA noir would be great.
Only if I'm in the writer's room. Yeah. If you're listening. So well, we agree. We loved it, and we love season. We can't wait for season two. What were you going to say, Kev?
Oh, I said, well, I think that's a show.
I think it's a show, too.
I think it's a show.
This has been iHeartGeek. Like, share, and subscribe. We got Ryan, Courtney. I'm Kevin. Have a great day.
You have been listening to the latest episode of the iHeartGeek Show. Make sure you visit our website at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you check us out on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And keep on geeking on to all of you geek rock stars.